Your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2024, and every day we inch closer to Easter Egg Day. In the Christian community, we call it Easter, but we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ. For the non-religious people in the Bahamas, and for the culturally religious, some of us look forward to Easter Egg Day. And that's what I intend to call it. I think that y'all discriminate in this country. And only, you say only children could celebrate Easter Egg Day. But I have some young people in studio with me. And before the end of this show, I'm going to have an Easter Egg Day for us oldies, for us older heads. It ain't going to be easy, though. Don't think you're going to be in any preschool Easter egg hunt. You may have to put on your snorkels and get in the water to look for that Easter treasure. We got an exciting show today as we approach the Easter holiday weekend. Before we get the show started, I have a little housekeeping to do. I have to say good morning to one of my most favorite, one of my favorite TV and film stars, not just in the Bahamas, but in the world. I have to say good morning to Raven White, who plays the character Dominique on Good Gumbay Kids. Good morning, Raven. Raven came to the farmer's market this weekend to make sure I was doing my job, and I had all the veggies ready for sale. Good morning, Raven, and good morning to the entire Gumbay Kids cast. If y'all don't remember, Gumbay Kids is the Bahamas' award-winning children's television show. But it's not just for children. It's for families. It's for adults. It's good entertainment. So good morning to Raven White, to Kiara Jones, who plays Aria, to Adriana Nihon, that plays Nell, and to my good friend and cousin, Leah Enius, who plays Mama Dilo, and to the entire cast of the award-winning show, Gumbay Kids. On that note, Gumbay Kids is hosting TV auditions for season 5 of the award-winning show. The auditions are open to all ages from 5 and up. All ages from 5 and up. You can register at gumbaykids.com. Rehearsals are May and June. Filming begins in July. It's going to be a good time. And I know Gumbay Kids, they already have had a number of underwater adventures on the show. But I'm going to send some people from these guests I have in studio with me this morning to go audition for Gumbay Kids and Gumbay Adults. Gumbay Adults, again, auditions are open all ages, 5 years and up. 5 years plus. Also, if you're looking for entertainment, you want to support a good cause, come out to the Hannah Hasty Times Family Association South Out and Walkathon. And, you know, maybe you could sponsor Brokefoot Bernie, a.k.a. Aaron Green, who broke her foot in March, on the sponsor form and find out how many miles can she walk on her recovered foot. If I told y'all I broke my foot catching Chicchanis, you wouldn't believe me, but that's how it happened. The Walkathon and South Out is Saturday, April 6th, 2024 at St. John's College. Walkathon starts at 8, South Out starts at 8. I recommend you buy your souse at 8 and eat it after the walk. You may only make it to lap 3 like I did last year. like I did last year. Okay, joining me in studio are representatives from the organization BREEF, Bahamas Reef Environment Educational Foundation. And they're here today to talk about two exciting events on their calendar. I'm glad that we're having this conversation in midterm break. So parents, adults, guardians, if you have children in the room, bring them to the radio. This is a great conversation for them too. BREEF is an important part of the conservation and education on marine ecosystems in the Bahamas and the world, from providing on-the-ground instruction for Bahamians to be stewards of the environment and advocating for strong policy to actively restoring reef habitat and representing the region internationally. BREEF has a successful multi-pronged approach to protecting the marine environment. To fulfill its vision, BREEF focuses on grassroots programs in education, outreach, research, and policy, which together impact all Bahamian stakeholders as well as visitors. To my guests in studio, please introduce yourself and then tell us briefly a bit more about BREEF. I love that, briefly about BREEF. A bit more about what you do at BREEF.
Okay, thank you so much.
Remember, Aaron, you have to pull the mic right towards you.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Aaron, for your introduction. I am Crystal Darling Sargent. I'm the communications officer at BREEF. I'm also the national operator for the Young Reporters for the Environment program, which we're going to be talking about today here. I am with our BASS scholar, who is the Bahamas Environmental Stewardship Scholar, Chris. He's already completed his 100-day semester at the Island School in Cape Eleuthera.
Okay.
And now he's doing an internship with us. And he can tell you a little bit more about himself.
All right. My name is Chris Clark. I'm the current BASS scholar at BREEF. I'm a part of the BESS program, which is a scholarship program that BREEF offers, which sends kids to the Island School. It's a four-month semester program for gap year students. So I just finished school in Georgia in May, and now I'm doing this program. The Island School is really a unique opportunity. It's a place that a lot of people in the Bahamas don't really even know about. I didn't know about it until I went there through BREEF, but it's beautiful place. You go do a lot of things that people don't rarely get to do. I went scuba diving. We went snorkeling almost every day. We spent a lot of time in the water learning about marine biology, hands-on, learning about fish from seeing it rather than just looking at it through a book. It was a really, really special place. And then afterwards, I'm doing a four-month internship at BREEF. So I'm at the BREEF office right now, but they also place you in different internship opportunities around the Bahamas. So I spent some time at Blue Lagoon. I'm looking forward to going to Adastra Gardens and Atlantis in the coming weeks.
So I have 1,000 questions. First of all, what is a young marine conservationist, environmentalist, scientist doing at Adastra?
I look at the environment is not just marine-based. So I know BREEF, our main focus is on our marine environment, but the environment is made up of many different ecosystems. So I'm looking forward to like learning every part of it that I could, because I might learn something at Adastra Gardens that we can put in effect at Blue Lagoon or at Atlantis to help with their conservation programs.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a great idea, because sometimes we don't consider that land or terrestrial environments have great impact on or are a part of a marine ecosystem.
Yes.
You know, like when the lizards come out the water, where do they brush off their feet? And when they come back in the water, do they track what it is they pick up on land into the ocean, and how does that affect the ocean?
Yes. So everything is interconnected.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Also, what were you doing in Georgia?
I have American citizenship. I was born in the U.S. I grew up here up until I was 16. So
okay.
I went to St. John's College up until 11th grade.
Green Giants.
And then for my 12th grade, I went to live with some family in Georgia, and I finished high school over there.
Okay, absolutely. They don't have any oceans in Georgia, though.
They do not. It was very different from over here.
All right. Did you feel a calling to the water? Like when I travel, my best experiences is when I am near living water, right? Yeah. So I was in Oakland in California, and Lake Merritt actually has its own, right? It has its own tide. Even though it was surrounded by concrete, I felt like I was home because the water was breathing. It was living. Did you feel a call back to the ocean while you were in Georgia?
See, it's interesting because I had like, my eyes weren't even set on marine biology in the slightest before I left for Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
But that summer, like the last few weeks, I started working with my uncle on the powerboats, doing powerboat tours.
Okay.
And I started to see like a whole bunch of stuff that I'd never seen before. I'm out seeing whales, dolphins, like beautiful beaches, like snorkeling on all the coral reefs, seeing a bunch of new fish. And it didn't click in me until like I left and went to Georgia that, wait, you know, I kind of missed that. That was mm-hmm. kind of fun. And then I started to think about it more and realize that, like, I'm asking my uncle, he knows quite a lot about, like, fish ID and stuff. So I'm asking him what this fish is that I saw, what that fish is that I saw.
Yeah.
And I noticed, like, okay, this is something that I'm really interested in. And my mom found the brief program, and I was like, okay, that's for me right there.
I want you all to remember this. It's March 2024. We have hail and whale sightings in March. Do you really see whales while you were working out there?
Yes.
I seen dolphins. If you ever had the fortune of camping in the Kemp's Bay area in Andrus, it's in the seaside, right? Mm-hmm. Every morning we went camping. Every morning we get up, go in the water for a little wash off. Uh-huh. A group of dolphins would swim by and they would stop and like check us out. And then they would keep swimming.
Oh, wow.
Right? I mean, you have to be there to understand, right, what you could see while you're just out there. And so the last question before we go into the Young Reporters competition, for the environment competition, mm-hmm. is give people a sense of what it's like studying marine life in their natural habitat. Like, we go to the aquarium over the bridge, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and we see the fish. They're very polite. Mm-hmm. The hotel have a wonderful training. They have a wonderful training program, right? They're hospitable. They'll perform for you. But what's it like? Like, you ever had a fish look at you like, buddy, can you not see I'm busy? Come back later.
It's just completely different. Like, I didn't think that it was much different. I did biology in school. Like, I've did the whole rundown. You learn about the mangroves, you learn about the basic fish. And I was like, okay, it's not going to be that different. But when you're in the water and you're, like, I like to free dive. So I'll go free diving on the reefs and you're 20 feet down and mm-hmm. you look under a crack and there's just a grouper sitting there. And you, like, could actually look at it and you could see the parts of the body that you've learned and you can see it move the way that you learned they move. It's just something different about the raw beauty of it.
And to add to that too, like, you see all kind of things. We have a public snorkel coming up. You could go on our Facebook page, our Instagram page, and look for Earth Day, which is Earth Week. Because mm-hmm. Earth Day is the 22nd, which is a Monday. The 27th, that's Saturday, we are having a Earth Day snorkel. So you could check that out as well. And it's public. It's completely free. So if you want to come and check out those marine species and see what's under the crevices and the rocks and what kind of fish swimming around Saunders Beach, you could meet us out there on April 27th.
Do I need to bring my own snorkel?
No. We have all the gear. You just have to bring yourself and your swimsuit. And whoever, your family, your kids, you must be 8 and up in order to participate in the snorkel. And you can just experience the Bahamian marine environment. A lot of people are first-time snorkelers, and they always are in awe because we go to the beach all the time, but so much we don't put our heads under the water to even see what's there. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I felt something. I don't know what it is.
No.
But if you could see it, then you gain an appreciation for it, and you're just like, ah, this is what we're protecting. And then you feel a connection, and yes, we need to, and you know we need to protect this.
Absolutely. Right? Parents, This is your time to shine. Bring your children out and give them a Finding Nemo experience. In fact, lie to them. Tell them you worked intimately on the filming of Finding Nemo, and you're going to take them into the water to show them what you was doing while you were working on the film.
They may not necessarily see Nemo.
But you'll see somebody.
But you'll see someone.
Do I need to know how to swim?
No,
you don't have to know how to swim.
This is a bubbling exercise.
This is a bubbling exercise. You have a life vest.
Okay, good stuff.
And we also have our newly trained lifeguard, Chris, who's our best quality. He just got his lifeguard certification.
Awesome.
So, yeah, we have people who are very good professionals in the water. Most of us snorkel and dive, so we're very good in the water.
Yeah, I'm glad y'all said that.
Everybody will be safe.
I'm a open water, ocean, free-floating champion of the world. The first thing you learn to do as a Bahamian child is how to float, how to bubble up.
Yes.
And maintain yourself on top of the water.
Yes.
It's a very important skill.
Mm-hmm.
Don't laugh because I call
it
bubbling.
It's a life-saving skill.
Absolutely.
It's a life-saving skill.
Okay, so we are here to talk about the Young Reporters for the Environment competition and the the Environmental Journalism Workshop.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, and do these two programs go hand in hand?
Yes, it's the same. So it's the YRE workshop. It's the Young Reporters for the Environment Journalism Workshop that goes hand in hand with the competition.
Okay.
So if you sign up for the competition, you're preparing your entry, we're not going to leave you out there hanging. We're going to say, come to the workshop. Sharpen your skills, learn more about the environment and reporting and how you can shape up your article to be a really good one. And you'll prepare your entry so you'll have a higher chance of winning.
All right. So the workshop happens on the 7th of April.
6th.
On the 6th of April, right?
Yes.
This Saturday, you're all going to be doing your workshop when you could be cheering me on at the HHT Walkathon, but we appreciate this opportunity to prepare yourself for an entry in the competition.
Yes.
Okay.
And so it is for students between the ages of 11 to 25.
Okay.
So you could go to your walkathon and your kids could go to the workshop.
No, that's great.
So that's a good idea. The goal of our competition is to foster marine stewardship and to give young change makers a platform to express their concerns about environmental issues from their perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
It is a leadership program that can be integrated also in after school environmental club or in a college club for the youth.
Okay.
So right now we're in the competition season.
Mm-hmm.
But YRE doesn't stop after the competition is over. It continues. It is ongoing, and it's something that we integrate at brief in our various programs. So there'll be aspects of YRE on our snorkels, right? And we have several public snorkels throughout the year.
Okay.
So if you have to miss a public snorkel for any reason on Earth Day, just pay attention to our social media at BREEF242
mm-hmm.
or Bahamas Reef, B Reef.
Mm-hmm.
At 242 on all social media platforms. And our competition, more particulars about the competition, like I said, it's for students between 11 to 25 years old. The entry can be a photo with a 50-word caption, a 1,000-word essay, or a 3-minute video that highlights the importance of environmental protection that is related to 3 categories. And I know this may sound like a mouthful, but all of this information is on our website. You'd be like, I don't remember what you said. You could go on our website at brief.org, BREEF.org, or
mm-hmm.
you can go on our social media at BREEF242. I mean, yeah, 242. And you will see all this information all over again. So we are, the topics are marine pollution,
mm-hmm.
climate change, which
mm-hmm.
is huge right now, right? And also the loss of biodiversity, which is important plant and animal species. 3 winners will be selected. This is the first time we've ever done 3 winners. We usually do 1.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of widening the pool to get more people notoriety, I guess, because
yeah.
we always do a press release afterwards and we say that these people are the winners to give more Bahamians opportunities. And they can also win. We have 3 prizes for the top winners, a laptop or a cell phone or a camera. along with brief merchandise as well. And we have some really cool merchandise. So these top entries, the top three winners, they'll be forwarded to the international competition.
Right.
Because while Brief is the national operator for this competition, this is a part of a wider network of 42 countries across the globe.
We have 350,000 young reporters.
Yes.
In 42 countries across the globe.
And that was last April's number. And the program has been growing, right? So that's closer to now 400,000.
All right.
So like I said, so this is a very important part as well. So for competitors 18 plus, because like I said, it's from 11 to 18, 18 to 25, and they're usually judged in a separate category altogether in the international scale.
Okay.
If they win the international competition, they'll be put in a pool, because you have roughly 15, 20 like winners.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit more than that. They'll be put in a pool and selected to go, possibly selected to go to South Korea next year in 2025.
For a COP?
For our international wiry meeting.
Wow.
So it's an international opportunity. It is an opportunity to network, to travel, to take this to another level. So if you're really, really passionate about the environment and you want to tell your story, mm-hmm. right, and this is from your perspective, what do you feel is important, right, environmentally? You tell us your story, and if it's a really, really good story that we know needs to go further, and it's the story of the Bahamas that we want to share with an international audience, then we will share that story.
Absolutely. In fact, I found this amazing article, Briefs Young Reporters for the Environment Program Gains International Recognition, and the Young Reporters for the Environment students in the Bahamas and Brief gained international recognition for their initiative on climate action and approach to combating plastic pollution. Recently featured in a UNDP article called Turning the Tide, How Local NGOs in Seychelles and the Bahamas are working to raise awareness and inspire action to address marine plastic pollution.
Yes.
I mean, so this is what mm-hmm. we talk about in terms of what you can gain, right? International recognition for your work being featured in an international publication.
Yes.
But I'm thinking in terms of jobs now, right?
Yes.
I mean, just so many opportunities. You become a reporter. Mm-hmm. You can work for your local news, private news agencies. Mm-hmm. You can work for the state's news agency. Mm-hmm. You could be a part of a media team for mm-hmm. the state's environmental ministry or programming, mm-hmm. whatever it is. You can work for international publications. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, be working for a magazine online mm-hmm. or print magazine.
Yeah.
You could go and work for universities and libraries who have access to funding to create articles about the environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just, you could be a tour guide at a hotel. So you say, look here, I love this stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go far from home, though. Yeah. I love my home. So I'm going to find a job working that also allows me to sort of do an administrative job and get in the ocean as often as possible. Right? The opportunities are just amazing.
Yes. Okay. And then even if you say that you're not leaving home, it is leaving home. Your message, your teaching, the education that you impart on people who visit here, that's going all over the world.
Absolutely.
So you are spreading that indirectly. You are spreading the conservation message across the world. I have been online so many times on social media, and I've seen people in the comments talk about the Bahamas and countries like the Bahamas being a sanctuary for certain species that are protected, mm-hmm. that are completely obliterated in some countries. We still have them because we protected them. Like that's important.
Like the Andrus grouper. That's a big body grouper, right? The Long Island grouper is a slim body grouper. Yeah. That's how I ID them in the water. I have to go to class, though. I need a professional certification.
Or even just the queen conch that mm-hmm. we love in the Bahamas, they were commercially extinct. I think they're still commercially extinct in Florida.
Yeah.
And this was not like hundreds of years ago they went extinct. This was in recent years they went commercially extinct in Florida.
And I realized something. So I have this little mini campaign that I'm growing to protect the queen conch, right? Mm-hmm. And the campaign is this. Basically, the premise is this. We should only eat queen conch for conch salad and raw conch applications. Right? That's it. That's it. Nothing else.
No crack, huh?
Listen, ma'am, let me finish my pitch. There are a number of other conch species in our waters that can be used for other conch applications. Now, with the crack conch, we do have to talk, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We have to talk about the capacity to tenderize a conch like the horse conch or the screw conch for a crack conch application. But for stew conch, for conch chowder, for steam conch, mm-hmm. right? For conch sauce, for all of these other applications, for conch fritters, for conch waffles, for conch balls, for conch taco, conch patty, all of them other things, mm-hmm. we could be using other species of conch in our waters for the commercial use, right? Commercial culinary uses. But I realize that this discussion won't go any further until Bahamians actually see and touch the other species of conch, right? Mm-hmm. Like there won't be a connect until they could touch. I literally have to touch it and say, "Yeah, this could replace. Yeah, I could eat this. Mm-hmm. I could eat right." And so for my marine conservationists who were saying, "Look, the whole point of this is to don't take anything out of the water, right? Unless maybe seagrass." The point is, let's begin the journey by showing people that there actually are alternatives to the things they thought were concrete.
Yes.
Right?
So one of the really big alternatives that we like to encourage is lionfish instead of grouper. Now, lionfish mm-hmm. is a bit tricky because it is venomous. Right. It has venomous tentacles. You have to know how to cut and prepare it in a certain way very carefully. However, if you've ever had lionfish, if you've never had lionfish, then you're missing out.
You're all talking to the lionfish. Listen.
You need to have lionfish. We need to grow the demand of lionfish because it is an invasive species and it is also putting a strain on our Nassau grouper, which is a key species.
Let me give you all the provenance of lionfish in the Bahamas. So we know that the Greek community, I think it's, was it Sailor Moon? I know that's an anime, but the restaurant that used to be in the Laifiki roundabout, right? And they were serving lionfish tacos. They really pick up the charge. Mm-hmm. There you go. Do you all see how valuable the Greek community is? At least they invented crack conch and then lionfish. And then our company, Seasonal Sunshine Bahamas, we picked up a lionfish campaign and aimed to provide lionfish tacos at festivals and events, especially agribusiness festivals. Mm-hmm. Festivals where Bahamians mainly, as opposed to a sort of tourist or upper class focus market. Very successful. Lionfish is the thing. If you think you're going to miss your grouper, let me tell you all how versatile lionfish is. If you like filet, right? If you like grouper fingers, then lionfish is your filet of choice. If you like stew fish and boil fish, you like to suck the meat off the bone, then lionfish shoulders, lionfish wings, they are the perfect replacement. And the beautiful thing about it is, lionfish is for feeding man or woman with man belly. It's a meaty fish, right? Yeah. And so we would sell the filet and then process the wings, the shoulders, and that'll give you a sense of just how much product you're getting mm-hmm. on one fish. In fact, for this is a perfect time for the Easter holiday.
Yes.
For the Easter holiday, one of the best ways to support the future of your very own country is to switch out your grouper with lionfish. If you do baked grouper on Easter Sunday, then you could do baked lionfish on Easter Sunday, same way. It's tricky for the person who's catching it, tricky for the person who's handling it, tricky for the person who's cleaning it. I find that the most confident cleaners at Montague Ram.
Okay.
Right? One of the best places to buy it.
Some experience.
Mm-hmm. Montague Ram.
So go to Montague to get your lionfish.
Get your Easter lionfish.
Yeah, we need to get it. We need to change the culture to make lionfish a cultural dish.
Yeah, we need to
because
put it on the
that pot. It's so tender. Mm-hmm. It's so soft. It's so good.
And new adults, new wives, new husbands, You're cooking for your spouse. You're cooking for your new in-laws. You got to impress them. You can't overcook lionfish. Mm-hmm. You got to burn lionfish to overcook it. It's tender. It's juicy. And it's just easy to cook, easy to season. Because I know your Grammy from Long Island ain't tell you how she's make the grouper taste the way it does. And that's where I got my secret from. I had to beg somebody Grammy in Long Island to tell me that.
Chris's Grammy is from Long Island, so Chris know about that.
I see him there shaking his head. Yeah, but so this is the sort of work that brief
and
focus.
And lionfish can also be eaten for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yes.
I had lionfish and grits. Mm-hmm. They steamed it down just like how you steam mackerel or anything else. Yeah, lionfish and grits.
Because what I do is I steam the shoulders and then take the mince off. Debone it and then make tuna salad.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You can make lionfish ceviche once the lionfish has been caught properly and you don't break the spine, releasing the venom mm-hmm. into the body of the fish. Mm-hmm. And then remember, there's a difference between venomous
and poisonous.
And poisonous.
Very different.
Sugar is poisonous. Anyway,
we love it.
Venom, you get injected with venom. Poison, you ingest poison. Right? So a barracuda can be poisonous. If it is, there will always be poison in it. There's nothing you can't even obey the poison out of it. Mm-hmm. But a lionfish now is venomous. And even if the venom penetrates the flesh of the fish, you can destroy the venom entirely by cooking it in temperatures above 170 or 140 Fahrenheit. Your oil has to be at 180 to be hot enough to fry, and to boil 220 is what you're looking at. So if you're preparing your fish properly, even if it has been injected with the venom from itself, you will denature or destroy the venom entirely. Absolutely.
What great information. Thank you.
There's a caller on the line, and I'm hoping it's a lionfish fisherman telling us when to pick up our next catch. Good morning, caller. Sorry for the wait.
Hey, Aaron.
Good morning.
I'm your guest.
How are you?
Now, this is a true story. One Saturday, a couple of years ago, I was riding by sand at the beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
I see this flashlight. Some people got the flashlight on their forehead. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm curious to the cat. I stop. I walk over. And guess it was? It was Chinese catching starfish. I mean, squid. And then they have to ask me if I want any. Anything with breed to eat, they love it.
I mean, I eat squid. I just should not. Here's why. We should not eat octopus and squid. Here's why. Because they are intelligent. I wouldn't want to meet an octopus in an alley in a fight. No.
But everything that we don't eat, they love. Mm-hmm. Everything. The starfish. I mean, they have the nets and bags of whatever. It's whatever they scrape off of. Anything that can move, they eat it.
Okay.
Well, I guess that's a blessing for them or that's a curse for us.
Well, I'm going to ask Brief right now.
Seahorse? Ask them about seahorse.
Well, okay, I will ask about seahorses.
All right. Thank
you very much. I just had a tourism idea pop up.
So our last, just quickly on the seahorse thing, our latest, most recent a national protected area is a seahorse pond.
In Sweden?
In Eleuthera.
Yeah, buddy.
And it has a unique species of seahorse, I've been told, which is only found in Eleuthera, Bahamas. It has been in that unique ecosystem for so long, excluded from everything else. That is a whole environment of its own.
So
and so those are very unique species of seahorse. In that area.
Is the unique feature noticeable on at first glance?
I don't think so. I've seen photos of them. Our photographer, who's also a friend of Brief, Shane Gross, he has a book that we also sell on our website, which is called The Bahamas Underwater.
Uh-huh.
We also take the purchase of the boat as a book is a donation to Brief. So you can go on our website at brief.org, BREEF.org, and you can look for that book as well. Lots of seahorses in there. So for this seahorse, I'm
right,
caller,
so you could see it.
You could, yeah, you could. Okay, you could check it out. The next point he raised about the people coming in and catching. So like I said, in some countries, we know that in countries like there are certain parts of China or Japan, we've heard reports that they have dwindled down some of their fisheries.
Well, so because figuring out how to feed 1.5 billion people is a tremendous job.
Yes.
A big challenge.
Exactly. Yeah. And so at a certain point, so this is why protection of our fisheries is so important. And when we talk about, oh, we need to cull turtles, or we need to cull sharks, or we need to move the protections off these key fisheries in our country who contribute so much to our marine environment, then we're not really thinking about the potential of poachers and other people who come in and take things from the environment that they should not be taking. And that is another reason why, among so many others, where we should not be tolerant of discussions talking about lifting the ban on sharks or turtles,
be prepared to have
closed
them, but
seasons.
Be armed with the knowledge, the information, and the context within which these conversations take place. Because often, let's think about the sharks. You think about yourself as a resident on an island of, say, 10,000 people, and there are, say, 400,000 sharks in the water, and you think, man, listen, there's too many sharks. When you think about yourself as a resident in a country of 400,000 people, and there are 400,000 sharks in the water, and you think, man, that's still plenty, plenty shark. We could cull them. But then when you think about 7.5 billion people on the planet, and then you only have 400,000 sharks in one of your prime nurseries, right, or protected areas, then you realize that the numbers, the perspective shifts. Certainly that's not enough sharks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then sharks travel back and forth too. So, you know, it's not like we have them contained in the Bahamas. We live in a country with 95% of our territory underwater, right? So this is why it's so important to us as well. Like, it's a huge part of us. Our oceans are a part of our archipelago, right? It's a part of our water and landscape in the Bahamas as Bahamians.
Yeah. And so much about it, right? That when we talked to Wayne Neely, we learned that the Bahamas is a special place on the planet and the universe, in the solar system, I'm sure, because of how hurricanes operate in the way in this space, and that they tend to clean, right? But let's go to this caller. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning, Aaron Cullis. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good morning.
And good morning to your guest.
You see any seahorse while you was in Barry Tarry?
No. I didn't go overboard. Only my line.
Okay.
Yeah, but what I wanted to say, too, they're talking about conservation. Mm-hmm. There is a group of Asian persons who fish on monticule from time to time.
With the line, with the rod and the line, right?
Yes, and they catch the tiniest of things. You know, and at some point I had to say to them, no, we put those back. We put those back. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Philippine lady also. She said they have a special dish that they prepare that uses fish that size. And
We do it too. It's called sardines and grits.
Exactly. Some of them smaller than sardines.
Yeah.
But they're catching them and they get these little tiny, ice cream bucket that they would put as much as can hold in that bucket that they can catch during that fishing
trip. Yeah.
And they would just take them home.
Yeah.
I think that somebody need to say something to them about it, because, you know, for me, I just fish on a regular basis. But I only catch a certain size, what I call like plate size for me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't catch that often, but the point is, that's what my aim is.
Yeah.
The smaller ones, I throw them back because I want them to get big plate size so I can come back for them later.
Yes, ma'am. And they could have a couple babies while you're waiting.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But these persons, they catch, and they can't speak much a word of an English. So, you know,
it's
you're
difficult
trying to
communicate.
I do my emotion with my hand and tell them, throw them back, you know?
Yeah.
They throw them back while I'm there, but I know when I'm going to get away.
But I tell you what, I'm certain that those in the Marine Resources Units at Ministry of Agriculture. Like, we typically see Montague Beach, people just go out there and swim. We don't necessarily see the need to have marine officers posted onshore to interact with beach users and beachgoers. Yeah. Because another element of concern is fishing on the rocks where people swim. Mm-hmm. That's why I wear shoes in the water in case I get kick a barracuda in the nose.
I fish in out there, but I usually go late at night.
I got you. That's good.
Yeah, I usually go at night.
Okay.
Because that's, to me, that's the only time when you actually just catch good fish. But I've seen
the fish have sense. They come when we're not in the water.
That's when I usually see good fish. You understand?
Yes, however,
they're always out there fishing. Mm-hmm. Especially like Sundays. I've seen them alone on Sundays out there. Their hooks are so tiny, you can hardly see it. Really, really fine. So it can catch the smallest.
The little things.
They can catch the smallest of things. So somebody need to say something to them about that, please.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Absolutely. And make visitors aware of both our laws and policies and our cultural practices.
Yes.
I was just going to touch on that because I think a lot of things that we see as problems are just cultural differences, because I'm sure where they're from, like, catching small fish is normal. Probably, like, they might live in areas where that's as big as fish get.
And they may be competing.
Big fish like you can in the Bahamas.
Right, they may be competing with commercial fishermen. Like, we catch them young before they leave the stream and head out into, you know, into the ocean. We got one more caller, and then let's go into the details again for the workshop and the competition. Good morning, caller.
Miss Green and your guest.
Morning, sir.
To the lady, the reason why the Orientals and the Jamaicans take the very, very little fish is they make a dish called fish tea.
That's where they
boil the fish right out, and then they take the bones back out. And it's like a fish tea with vegetables and stuff in it. But I was on deck, on the bus, all the way with your guest until she spoke about the option of culling. See, in life, you know, let me give you an example of something that's happening in the Family Islands now. We are not allowed to kill the turtles, okay? Fine. But now that the turtles are getting bigger, what they are doing, they are eating and breaking out all the conch shells, and they're slowing down the act of fishing in those islands. So when you grow something too much, then you have a reverse effect. The sharks, when the sharks get too big, they ain't want no little grouper run down on the grouper or no little barracuda no more. They want food. You understand? In a nation like ours, where they don't have no natural predators, they turn to the next best thing for food, which is the swimmers, because we do a lot of swimming in this country. Now, in life, everything in life is a balance. I don't care what you support or what I support, we must maintain a balance. So we can't have the sharks going 20, 30 feet. And we can't have a little season where we say we got sharks over a certain size. We're allowed to cull them and take them, because they will turn around and eat you.
Now cousin, before you go, would a compromise be that Family Island fishermen can kill a shark that is menacing, right? Or that is attacking, or in particular, that is trailing the boat?
Well, see, once those sharks, they just like the lions and the tigers in the wild, once they taste human blood, then they develop a knack for that. And I know lately, you've been seeing the sharks coasting right up on the beaches, right on the beaches, and we have to maintain some type of balance, or nobody will be able to go in the water.
Listen, I think this is a great topic of consideration, right, for a YRE, although it may be an older entrant, because the particular element, just as you were speaking, it reminded me, the particular element that changes in the Bahamas is this, is that we have a lot of undocumented migrant movement. And so you're right, that there may be a number of sharks that have tasted human blood, right? Because of an unfortunate situation where a boat may have overturned, right? Or people may have fallen off the boat. But I would like to say that it is something that we still need to talk about, and let us not put down a hard and fast spike in the ground indicating that we are unwilling to move. But I think a conversation like this needs to be happening all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And here's the next thing, though, before you go. I watch a man jump off a boat, and you know, like in the rodeo where a man will jump off one horse and jump onto another horse and wrangle the other horse?
Yeah.
I watch a man from Abaco jump onto a turtle from a boat and wrangle the turtle. He didn't take he didn't capture it.
Fish, you know. Yeah, you hold them and you point their head in an up direction.
You could do that?
I used to.
Okay, then. Just you used to. I think that needs to be a rite of passage.
Yeah, but see, like I say, Miss Green, the turtles, they eat conch and they eat lobster.
And they could crack shell.
All of that.
Yeah, and they could crack the shell. That's for me,
exactly.
That's the thing.
Exactly. So we have to come to some
balance.
Kind of compromise.
Yeah.
You know, and then we got to think about our little darlings that go swimming and splashing in that water for an 18-foot shark to pass by and see that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, then, thanks.
Thank you. Also, to the person, the text who said that we're into that lionfish conversation, you ain't here with the gentleman the caller just said? The caller just said, you got to think of the little babies. You got to think of the little baby shrimp, the little baby lobster, the little baby conch, the little baby schoolmaster, my favorite snapper in the world, that mango snapper, and then the hog snapper, because the lionfish will eat them all.
Yes, they will.
Okay.
And their eggs.
Let's take these two callers quickly, and then we're going to go make sure we repeat the details for the competition and the workshop. Good morning, caller.
If I hear you right. Good morning. Puffy up.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Green, to your guest. Are you saying the lionfish is more better for us to eat than this barry would be like?
Okay, first of all, yes. Because
the barry poison.
Right, if a barracuda is poisonous, there's nothing you could do to destroy or remove the poison.
But yeah, I understand that.
But
part.
If a lionfish... If a lionfish's venom penetrates its flesh, you could destroy the venom entirely.
And that's
So tell me something. All the barries poison? Because they tell us the smaller ones.
No, not all the barries are poison. But see, the way to know if you could eat a barry or not is you need to have an intimate relationship with the people who catch the barry. Now, when I say intimate, what I mean is you could go to their house and tell the Grammy they poison you.
Oh, gee. What about the flies? They say if the flies go on it,
don't trust that.
There's like a whole lot of different
law. Yeah, so what folklore around it?
Okay, what about the bigger the body is more dangerous to eat and deal with the smaller one?
The thinking about that is the older a barry is, the more time a barry has had to roam the ocean. And that in that time, that barry may have eaten some rust from a ship in the water.
So you know any restaurants over here, Ms. Green, we could go and order the lionfish as a meal or something? Or what are we doing to encourage them?
Okay, I can tell you what. I used to be able to call them off my head. Mm-hmm. There's a restaurant on Carmichael Road.
I heard about Beverly's.
Beverly's. It ain't Beverly's.
Oh, okay.
They sell lionfish. They sell fish sandwich.
They need to come to a commercial on the show so we can know
who they are with you for that.
So we can call them up. Put in our order, tell them to do a commercial with the show.
Absolutely.
So one last thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That sound like, because when I say people say, man, don't say that, man.
Mm-hmm.
Just like how you say the octopus smart and you shouldn't eat it, but you love your octopus love your squid.
I love the squid, but squid is octopus cousin, and octopus have a memory and a grudge.
okay, well, how they have a memory and a grudge? The turtle get the jelly thing on it, would taste so good. Are you saying that we should compromise and be able to eat the turtle too?
If we want to put turtle back into our palate and our diet, then we need to farm turtles.
I think
that's the compromise. Okay, listen, I got a couple more calls. Thank you. Producer, let's run to these callers quick. Good morning, caller.
Thank you. Good morning, David. Stark in the voice along with you, Aaron.
Good morning, Bremen.
We need justice, law, and order in this country, the Bahamas.
Yes, we do.
But what I want to say, right?
Yes, sir.
Couple of things. When it comes to the beaches, what people got to stop doing is fishing in the area. And throwing food bags and food in the area, and it would keep the sharks away from the beaches. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And it would be better for the children and everybody else.
Yes, sir.
One other thing I was going to say, but it got away from me. Anyhow, much love.
That's all right. We can catch that grouper tomorrow.
God's willing.
Blessings. One more caller, very quickly. Good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning. How you doing, bro?
Good, thank you. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm calling just to make 2 points.
Okay.
Reference to the barracuda. They asked me that if all barracuda are poison.
Right. We know not all barracuda are poison.
Okay. So I call in the clear or make a point of reference to that. I know that the toxin that is inside the barracuda comes from where the smaller fish off the coral. And when they eat off the coral, the toxic is called phycotoxic. So once the smaller fish is being eaten by the bigger fish, you have a poison that's called phycotoxic once you eat it.
Okay.
All right. And then also the lionfish is extremely easy to clean. It isn't as hard as people make it sound.
Yeah.
You can use a scissors.
Heavy duty kitchen chairs. Yeah.
And they're really easy to catch.
Easy to scale.
Yeah.
Yes, very, very easy.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for calling.
All right.
And so the one thing I know, the rule is this. If a barracuda was caught by itself, if he's a lone wolf,
don't eat it.
If he in the water and everybody decide they ain't talking to him, even the sharks don't mess with him. Don't take the risk of eating him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right now, you catch him with his friends, it could be sad. You have to think about whether you want to take that barry from his friends. But don't eat a barry caught by itself.
That's a good point you raised with shark. I just want to run through these couple points. Sharks are the cleaners of the ocean. A healthy shark population is a healthy fish population. Okay, mm-hmm. So you want to enjoy that grouper. You need to make sure the sharks are there to keep mm-hmm. the ocean clean. You could do more research on that personally. The person who talked about fishing and capturing small fish, that feeds into policy and enforcement. Mm-hmm. Brief also does law enforcement workshops as well, where we talk about fisheries regulation. We have that when we talk about the size and the weight of all these types of different species and how they can be caught and when they can be caught. Mm-hmm. Go on our brief website, breef.org. for all the fisheries regulations. You could also download the Fish Rules app, right?
Fish Rules app.
Fish Rules app. And it has like all the regulations from Florida and the Bahamas in it as well. And then for the culling and talking about sharks and turtles, a lot of what the caller said, it was assumption, it's speculation. Those are not facts. There's nothing called a developing a taste for human blood and stuff. All of that we need to do research. Okay. Research is the only way. No shark expert would tell you any of that information. We dive, we snorkel, we do it all the time. We're always
swim
in the water.
We
interact with sharks and turtles all the time. They are peaceful for the most part, right? So just sharpen your knowledge on sharks by experts and people who have studied them. And that's where we need to go with this. Also, this is also a good opportunity to write a paper or do some research for our Young Reporters for the Environment competition. You may want to talk about sharks and the loss of biodiversity as one of your topics, also climate change. Mm-hmm. We had the hottest summer on record last year. We saw almost near depletion of a lot of our reefs at the Sculpture Garden. And they bounced back. A lot of them bounced back after the heat wave.
Okay.
But this year is not promising. We just had the hottest February on record as well last mm-hmm. month.
Okay.
So we have to be concerned about climate change, loss of biodiversity in our important key species and fisheries. So this is why protecting them is important. A lot of countries have already near depleted, right? Mm-hmm. And they're completely removed all of their key species and their sharks and turtles. And so we don't want that to happen here. So we don't want to go down that slippery slope. Research needs to be done, yes. And also, we need to keep these protections. Legislation is also in the works, so we'll pay attention to that. Everyone pay attention to the news on the latest in the fisheries regulations in the Bahamas.
Absolutely. So let's just do a brief rundown. Young Reporters for the Environment competition. All entries must be submitted by April 14, 2024. You can go to brief.com.
.org.
Brief.org.
Our social media pages, right. Brief242.
to submit your application. And then the workshop, the Young Reporters Workshop, will be on April 6th. And that will help to prepare entrants for their submission. And then I just, as we close the show out, I want to say thank you, Chris. Thank you, Crystal. I want to just throw an idea out there for a potential submission. The tug of war between tourism and marine conservation, mm-hmm. when you understand that many sunscreen, sun protection creams actually have a detrimental negative effect on marine and coral life. So how do we bring balance to the tug of war between tourism and marine conservation, knowing that tourists come to see our marine life? I would throw that out there for consideration. I would see a tug of war between the turtles and the humans, to be honest with you. I hear they got good grip strength with their jaw. Again, Chris and Crystal, thank you for joining me today. I wish we had more time because I wanted to ask you, Chris, just before you go, it's Easter season. Producer, play the music, please. Hot cross bun with or without raisin?
Without.
That way quick. I even get a chance to say the How Bahamian Are You game show. Okay, Snapper, Grunt, or Jack for Good Friday?
Snapper.
Bub. He's a Bahamian. Anyway, you guys, thank you for tuning in to On the Clock with Erin Green. Thank you to the callers and to the texters. It says, when will a proper pier be built? Not for y'all to go fish out on my money, you know, sir. Anyway, you guys, have a wonderful day. Thank you, texter. We can throw that question back on the table next week. Have a great day. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri is up next.